This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the U.S. and around the world. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it when you're always listening or watching the show on YouTube. Don't forget to do us a favor before we begin the show. Go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo, and subscribe. That's all we ask, free show. We got 100 shows already on YouTube. Of course, the audio goes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. And on there, you will see a lot more than 100 shows because the show's been around for over 3 years. So we are very lucky. And why has the show been around? Because of our audience in the U.S. and around the world. If it wasn't for you, by sharing the show, subscribing, getting it out, we really appreciate it all over social media. That's why the show continues. And we want to thank you. Hey, tonight, today, this morning, wherever you are, we have a special show. This is awesome. I know the baseball world, one of the greatest baseball families in the game, the Doyle brothers. Now, everybody knows the Doyle brothers because they played at all different levels and they've been in the World Series. They've been hitting coaches, all kinds. Today, we have the CEO of the Doyle Baseball School. They've been around over 40 years, started in 1978. This is the main person, Blake Doyle. Trust me, he was a hitting coach with the Rockies between 2013 and 2016. Fourth round pick, went to Caverna High School in Caverna, sounds Italian, in Kentucky. And I got to tell them that I was a big fan of the, and I know he didn't play in it, but his brother did, Denny, in the 75 World Series when I was a little kid. I taped that on a tape recorder, watched every game, and I still have it. It's one of the best World Series ever. But let's welcome a great person, a Christian. He's outstanding. Let's welcome Blake Doyle. Blake, how you doing, my friend?
Peter, it's great to be here, and thank you for having me. We're doing as well as we can be right now. Better than we deserve.
Yes, and thank you for joining us. You know, during these times, tell us what you've been doing, because I know with the coronavirus down, and folks, by the way, we're going to put everything in the show notes. Blake has some great stuff on Facebook, and we'll get to that, and we'll talk about it. But tell us what you've been doing, even along with the Facebook pages.
Well, actually, my phone just...
It looks like Blake's doing like acrobatics. I didn't know you were a gymnast also.
Yeah. So
that's all right.
Actually, what's been happening is I'm kind of Nurse Cratchit right now. My wife is struggling with cancer, but she's a bomb and she's getting it done. I do a lot of online stuff with elite athletes when I can. And I have elite athletes that come and before Jean Ann had cancer, is dealing with this cancer, they would live with us for a little bit and we mentor them. But since 2016, 3 years with the baseballs, Doyle Baseball, 40 years, been blessed. And Peter, we just try to make lives better, not only for in the baseball world, but life itself. And in order to teach youngsters and coaches true meaning of life, that's what we did, and that's what we do.
That's awesome. And I know everybody in U.S. and around the world that listens to the show, we'll be praying for your wife that everything turns out well. You know, interesting, you talk about, you know, online elite athletes. I'd be kind of curious to talk about a little bit about, you know, when you're working with an elite athlete online, what does that look like? What does it sound like? What goes on?
Well, I have a number of accountability questions that my athletes have to answer each week. And they have to call in. They have a specific time they have to call in. That's part of the accountability. But also they send in videos of them hitting with the drills that I diagnosed for them, and then send in videos during game time too that I get to watch. Now, that's just not amateurs. Also do that in the professional realm.
You know, I got to ask you, and you mentioned video, and I bring that up because today on MLB Network here in Chicago, you know, Javier Baez, a great athlete, great player, a lot of great instincts with the Cubs and everything. You know, he mentioned today, and there was a debate on both sides of this. Love to get your opinion since you brought up video, and you were a hitting coach with the Colorado Rockies at the big league level. You know, he pretty much came out and said, because we're not able to review, you know, ourselves during the game, that's why I'm struggling. That's why other guys like Yelich and other players are struggling, you know, and then others have flipped and said, well, wait a second, how come, you know, the Atlanta Braves scored 30 runs the other day? How come, these other guys are batting over 300? Why aren't they struggling? That's kind of that's a tough topic unless you've really been up there at that level.
Well, I hate to say this, Javi, but that's an excuse.
Yeah.
You have the ability to watch after the game, to go in and to watch, and everybody watches in between innings, or, you know, when I was in the big leagues, that's what they would do. But they would not just watch for mechanics. You know, they wanted to watch the calls and how they were pitched, which was brilliant. However, I have to say to Javi, that's kind of an excuse, bro. You need to buckle down a little bit. Sorry, I'm just going to call it the way it is. You know, and, I had a blessing, a huge blessing in the 3 years. You know, the first year I was there, I was special assistant to the owner and the general manager. The next 3 years, I was a hitting coach. And within there, I had two guys that won the batting title. And then after that, I've actually worked with four guys that had the batting title. That was never in their repertoire. Sorry. That wow. They had to go in and see a at bat and mechanics. Then all of a sudden, you know, when the bell rings, you know this, Peter, when the bell rings, you're out to compete. You can't go up to bat looking at mechanics and thinking about mechanics. So my job was with the guys that won the batting titles, when you're really, really good, I'm going to watch you and I'm going to make sure that you maintain those mechanics when you were good. Now, when you're really, really good and you feel good, you're going to need to communicate that to me. Then I get a mental picture in my mind of what you did that at bat, and we can bring it back to them. But the bottom line with a hitting coach in the big leagues, you're a mental coach more than you are. I mean, the guys, come on, Peter, they're in the big leagues because they can hit.
Yeah.
Now, what you do is you become a father figure, grandfather figure. And it's so funny that, you know, the guys, everybody has egos. You have an ego, I have an ego.
Absolutely.
Well, the guys never wanted anybody else to know that they might be struggling. So I'd be standing at the batting cage or down in the tunnel before game and so forth. And they'd come up and whisper, Blake, you need to watch me. You know, he didn't, nobody wanted to anybody else to know that they were struggling, even with their teammates. And it was so hilarious. I go, I got you, bro. So let's go.
That's interesting. You know what, you know, and even on Javi's behalf, you know, he's struggling, he's having a tough time, maybe just got frustrated, you know, and had to blame something. I think he'll learn from it, you know, because the other thing is the message you're sending is a bad message. Because what about your high school kids and what about your younger kids? What are they supposed to do when they're struggling? Just give up and say, well, I don't have video.
Well, you're absolutely right, Peter. You go back to the basics. You go back to the basics. And the basics, balance is a key. And then what are you doing to keep you from being on balance? And what are you doing to keep you from scoring a pitch? You know, one of the other things that the kids are going through right now is the launch angle. I'm sorry, crap. you know, people that are on the major league level and have done what I've done, they don't even go there. you know, launch angle and come on. Physics is this, you know, I'm a dumb Kentucky boy, but I do know that the circumference of a baseball is larger than the circumference of a bat. So if you square it, guess what's going to happen? There's going to be backspin. And you don't have to worry about launch angle. You have to worry about getting direct to the baseball, period. And our kids, that's one of the reasons I love what you're still doing, bro. You're teaching the coaches. And when you're teaching the coaches, those are the ones that are teaching the kids. And my dad, you know, my dad put three sons on a major league level, and they would go, and people would go, are you kidding me? He must have been unbelievable. No, he wasn't. He was smart enough to know he didn't know it all, you know?
Were there times he stepped away and let somebody else handle it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Uh-huh. See, a coach is never wrong. He's only given the information that he has. How can that be wrong? Now you can be more right. And our father knew that he could be more right. So there was times to step away and allow other people to say something.
Yeah, and it's
amazing, man.
Yeah, and it's history. Well, you know, again, without, you know, a great father, man, I mean, he can be, and mother, they could really lead you in the right direction. When you look at Major League Baseball, and I always say this, I love watching MLB Network, but sometimes they've got to be careful. They got a big pulpit. And, you know, if Donaldson's on, they're talking about launch angle and this and that. And, you know, little kids are seeing it. You know, I went to Cuba and they were talking about it in Cuba.
I guarantee it.
Which was incredible. But, you know, but from a simplistic standpoint, the ball's going to tell you pretty much what you did, right? Wherever it ends up. If it's a line drive in the gap, whatever angle you swung at must have been correct. If it's a fly ball in the air, same thing.
Bro, Peter, I had an unbelievable blessing to not only coach in the big leagues, but I coached a guy that won the batting title, Michael Kadire. I coached and won that year the batting title of Justin Morneau. And here's what we would do. If he wasn't feeling good, we would go out to the field with a batting tee and put balls on the batting tee and hit it with a fungo. Because all of a sudden you start feeling the backspin again. And hey, these guys are unbelievable. I mean, you know, Morney is hitting balls out of the ballpark with a fungo on a tee. But what he's getting is head stand still, stand behind the ball, let the bat do what it's supposed to do, and not try to generate it himself. Yeah, the guy was amazing. And he won batting title in two leagues.
Yeah, and you mentioned this word several times. I think it's so important. You mentioned, first of all, you mentioned balance, but then you also mentioned feel. Those seem to be critical areas, you know, the head movement, not moving too much, the balance. And I remember even at Doyle Baseball School, when we did some work there, shout out to Terry Ayers for introducing me to you guys. You know, you had the no stride hitting.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, talk about how that kind of, because you see certain guys with two strikes now going to no stride hitting also.
Yeah, you also see guys like Harper doing it again.
Yep. The Cubans, that's what they teach pretty much. If you go to Cuba, you'll see every Cuban hitter. They'll either do a knee cock, you know, or lift a heel, and they don't stride a lot of them.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is this. When we started the baseball school in 78, we thought we knew what we were doing. We did not. just because we were professional baseball players didn't mean anything. But what we would do in order to get the kids to feel their hands operating properly is we took the stride away and we taught loading without the stride. And the people that did the no stride was the kids. They came back to us and went, Blake, do I need to take a stride in the game? I feel so much better without taking a stride. And I'd go, And then we'd sit Brian and Denny and Blake in the conference room and argue our butts off to one another. And we go, are we going to have the guts to go? You don't need to. And then we had Azinger's son, golfer.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, wonder when baseball was going to get smart. Do you think if we took a stride and could hit it longer, we would? And we're going, okay, it's time. And so here's what happened, Peter. So we started teaching no stride. And if people wanted to stride, the kids wanted, but understand why you stride. Now, you can load, and we would say to Mike Martin, oh, he goes, well, that's power. You got to step. I said, well, then step three times. Have three times as much power. Bro, that's not the way it rolls. And Mike went, and I spoke at the national convention and all of that stuff. And college coaches back in 1990, 89 and 90 went, I want to be the second college coach that teaches that, not the first.
Not the first.
Well, then, and then you have all the guys in the big leagues that started doing it. And it's a timing. A step is a timing. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And, you know, I had Corey Dickerson, who is a big hitter. And he went, hey, two strikes, I ain't striding. And he started hitting home runs with two strikes. I went, you know, I'm not telling you what to do, Corey, but duh. I mean, if you're hitting it with two strikes, why are you even doing it? Why are you loading the way you're loading? You know? And then, you know, everybody cuts it down a little bit with two strikes, but that's why that was one of the reasons I was hired as major league hitting coach. Is the Rockies had a horrible 2013 two strike hitting, and then I was hired, and they said, "This is what I want you to do." And all of a sudden, we get crazy with two strikes, and it's great. And then 14, 15, 16. We lead the league in runs scored.
Wow.
Every, you know, the problem was we gave up more runs.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's always a problem. That's always a problem.
I was hired to put points on the board. That's what we did, and it was fun.
Absolutely. You know, and the other thing about the no stride with the young kids, I found when back then also, you know, if you tell a kid to stride, he's really going to stride. But if you don't mention it at all, you know, you're hoping that he takes a, you know, if he did take a stride, it wasn't too far.
Correct. The whole thing is keeping the weight back so you can create space in order to hit. And space is the key. And every guy in the big leagues, Peter, always works every day on stay through and creating that space. That's the key. Now, they're up there because they can flip and hit. However, they have to always watch on what's going on that's hindering the space that the club path goes through in order to hit the ball. And as
mean by staying through, right?
Correct.
Staying
it's
through
the space.
As long as possible.
It's the space. You should have 17 to 25 inches of space where you can mess up and still make good contact.
Question, is that undertaught at the younger levels or at the younger levels on below Major League Baseball? It should be taught more.
Of course, but the reason it's not taught is only because coaches aren't wrong. It's just lack of knowledge.
Hmm. Yeah.
Lack of knowledge. And that I'm telling you, you know, I went 360 on kids that I taught. One of the great things that I loved doing was all of a sudden I'm competing in Arizona against Turner Ward, who's the hitting coach with Arizona. And he was one of my kids.
Wow.
and I mentored Walt Weiss, and he was my manager.
Yeah.
And now Davey Martinez,
yep.
You know, manager with Washington, but I was competing against him when we would go in and do interleague with Chicago.
Blake, how would you, when you advise people to, you know, teach staying through the pitch, you know, it's easy to say, but, and I know you can't show the drills and everything, but how do you, I guess, how do you work on it? What do you do to work on staying through the pitch? Because one thing I found staying through the pitch also, it improves your timing, obviously.
Of course, but the biggest thing is to go short bat, choke up on the bat. And you don't swing fully on a tee, and you hit the ball and you stop the bat halfway to the pitcher or at the pitcher with palm up, palm down.
Love it.
But the key to staying through, so you cannot stay through a pitch unless your back shoulder gets all the way through to the pitcher. Now, that's the conundrum. That's the problem with young coaches and so forth. They don't want to, you know, and hitters, young hitters, you don't want to use your shoulders, right, to swing.
Right.
But the bottom line, you cannot get through the ball unless your back shoulder gets all the way turned through the pitch. And that's why you do the drills.
Love it. You know, earlier you talked about the mental part of the game. You know, being a big league hitting instructor, a lot of it's mental. Explain, would that be preparation for the game, a plan for that at bat against that pitcher? Explain some of the things that goes on.
Okay, that's a great question. What happens is you'll see the really good hitting guys in the big leagues standing in the well before the hitters go up the steps to get on deck. Mm. And the reason you stand there is you never give advice. You wait for the hitter to ask you. And, you know, it's like Morneau would go, well, he got me with the changeup the last time. Blake, what do you think? Do I go up and just sit on that this at bat? Did you see whether or not I was getting my backside through? And I would go, let's not go there. We're not going to do mechanics.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going. And I go, you're a hitter. It's time to go up and freaking compete. Do your thing up there. And the other reason you stand there is because, you know, we had all kinds of knowledge even back in 16. And you go, hey, bro, 70% of the time, this guy leads off with this. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to do that, but 70% of the time, boom. And there's times that guys will just go, hey, Blake, what you got? And I go, okay, if you want to know what I got, he's going to throw you a heater right here, ambushing. Well, you got to lose, you know? But the things that I forget that I really, really miss – is preparing our hitters for Kershaw's, for the Samarjans. That is so cool before a game. And what I do instead of just prepare them, I'd go to each guy that's faced him before and go, what you got on him? Share with the guys. What you got on him? And because that son of a gun sitting over in the other clubhouse going, over every one of you guys, you know, with his catcher and what you got on that. So it's all a mental, and I miss that part. Don't miss the travel. Don't miss the press. I miss the competition and the preparation.
You see this with a lot of young kids, and it'll be interesting if it happens in the big leagues. You know, because I found going from – I remember with Team USA younger group, and I got in independent ball. We had double A, triple A guys, some ex big league guys. Things didn't seem to change. They're kids at heart in some ways. I mean, sure, they might be a little bit smarter in some ways of the game. But, you know, a guy makes an out with young kids a lot of times. You know, a young kid will come to the dugout, and you know what he does, you know, especially if he made a couple. He'll say, Coach, what'd I do wrong? What would be your response if you got that situation or any other?
The first thing as a coach, you know, the game is a failure game. And in order to have success, the first thing kids need to learn is how to deal with failure. Sometimes you just have to, sometimes you have to tip your hat and just go on. What I, you know, I had guys in the big leagues to go, what'd you see? And I would never say anything negative. I'd go, that's a great hack. Now go up and attack. So, because if you give them something that they need to do the next time, what do you think they're thinking on the way up there? It's time to compete. It's not time to think. We think, we prepare. The key to success, besides learning how to fail, is preparation. It's all in the preparation. And you do your preparation. So one of the things that we teach our coaches, and we did at Doyle all the time, the coaches, is look, guys, if you're standing in a third base coach's box and you're instructing, then you haven't done a good job. You instruct during practice. When the bell rings, it's time to compete and have fun. You know, nobody wants – you can't instruct there. You know, the other thing is kind of like third base coaches. You know, the best third base coaches in the world never say anything. They are – and they never wave hitters on. They're a stop sign. Base runners, they're a stop sign. Because a base runner's job is to run until you see a stop sign.
And that's a great point because, you know, we teach our young kids, we're making them too much mechanical, too robotic, you know, follow the coach, everything he does. And there's no instincts in the game. Kids aren't allowed, like you said, they're not allowed to fail where they're actually going to learn it. They fail a little bit. And then it's kind of fun to make a decision once in a while if you're 11, 12 years old, instead of somebody telling you what to do all the time.
You know what? The guys that I mentor and started mentoring young ages, I went, I want you swinging the bat. I don't care where the ball is. I don't care. You know, Mike Martin never called us and went, Blake, you got a kid that walked 40 times last year. I got a scholarship. No, that doesn't happen. Hey, you go up and you're a hacking fool. You key that down as you get older. But right now, I mean, if you can hit a ball 4 inches outside or 2 inches inside, and you can hit that, you can hit the one down the middle really good. They have to learn to feel, that's that word again, with balance, how to do their thing.
Yeah, I love the balance aspect of it. I think we underestimate that because we think, you know, oh, that's understandable. You have to be balanced. I watch every major league player, not only in games. I know sometimes they fall towards the plate rotation, but I watch them in BP. When they take batting practice, they swing hard, let's say, but man, are they balanced from start to finish? You don't see them falling all over the place.
Peter, you know, you're a great baseball man. If I have anything to give you, you make every player. I make my big league players that I work with now swing and count to three after they swing.
Love it. Love it. You're speaking my language.
They have to. There's not my kids, when I was doing the baseball school, they fell off balance, 5 push-ups.
Now, let me ask you on that. And I think it's a great point. I love it. I think, and I've seen it work so many times with young kids when they do that. Somebody might come back and say this. They might say, well, in the actual swing, when you swing, there's always a recoil.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely, positively not. And, hey, you're talking to a guy that was a big league hitting coach and had batting title guys. Recoil. Schmeecoil, forget that.
Love it.
And there's no rotation either. Everything's linear. And the back foot moves forward or behind because everything's linear.
So and we don't have to get really onto this as far as mechanical part, but basically the body, what does it do? It starts balanced, it comes back a little bit, and then when it goes back to balanced.
I don't want to get too mechanical.
Without percentages, just a general idea.
It starts, you know, Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So you must start 70 to 80% on the back leg.
Mm.
And when you load, the head goes down because now it goes into the back leg even more.
Mm.
And it stays there.
And the head goes down, which means that, yeah, it helps it stay there. It's not going this way.
That's correct. And it goes down in order to get the back hip to go forward.
Love it. Talk about, because, you know, you see different styles. You know, I've been to Japan a lot, and you see the Cubans. We were just talking about it. Cubans don't, you know, they don't have a stride. They don't teach a stride. They just teach a knee cock. You have guys that lift their legs higher up, you know. Is it just preference of style?
There is when the load. Everything's got to go on the back leg, right? So there's four ways you can get it on the back leg. Number one, the Cubans go knee cock. Mm-hmm. No, knee cock is good, but it means nothing unless the front hip moves too, back and in, you know?
It can't be just a knee.
That's correct.
Okay.
The waist without the shoulders moving. Then you have your stride. The only reason you stride is you pick up the foot in order to get the weight back.
Mm.
Okay. Then you have the toe tap, Nolan Arenado.
Yep.
So what happens? He steps back to get the weight what? Back. And then he steps forward, but makes sure the weight stays back. And then you have the hardest thing in the world to do, and that's the knee kick. That's the high knee kick. And I can tell you this right now, everybody that's ever knee kicked, it is absolutely, positively, and you can do the research on this, it's impossible to keep your head back.
Mm. On the high, when you lift your knee up high?
Yeah. Now, it's going to go forward a little bit. Very disciplined hitters can keep their head back somewhat, but it's going to move, and that's why your leg kick guys are pull hitters.
Makes sense.
They can't, because now they have shortened what I'll go back to. They've shortened the area of contact. They don't have the same area of contact. That's why Trey Mancini, God love him right now, he's dealing with colon cancer, can hit all over the ballpark at 6'4" and whatever, because he stays back behind the ball.
Interesting. Love it. Love it. You know, on top of that, we talk about when it comes to you watch television. Now, they can't use it now, but you see a lot of hitting coaches. It seems like it's the hitting coach there with it. Got an iPad. Is there information coming out of that iPad? What kind of information comes out of there?
Yeah. What you're doing is when a pitcher comes in, you're pulling that guy up and see I worked on percentages. And percentages with two strikes and percentages when he was behind in the count. And you're looking at the iPad to see how he did left-handed and right-handed hitters and what the percentages were. The great thing about the game today is as soon as the game was over, back when I was a hitting coach, every swing of every hitter was already downloaded on my iPad.
Wow.
So I could mark it up or send it to them and go, hey, what you got on this? What you got on that? And the great part again, but I can't tell you who's doing this, is how many of the guys in the big leagues that I've worked with that send me those and get what I got on it.
Wow.
I mean, that's how they make their living.
Sure.
And they love their hitting coaches. Don't get me wrong. But if they get if they have somebody that's worked with them for a long time, it's pretty cool to get what I got too, whether they use it or not.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it that they even want to know what I got.
And as you said, it's their living. They're professionals. They need to find every edge possible to make themselves better in competition. But once, like you said, once competition starts, because with all this video going on, we talked to Javier Baez, what he said, you know, you can really get inundated with too much with this video where your mind just kind of.
Well, I can tell you what Javi's doing right now because I was there for so long. Javi is giving every pitcher 17 inches, and that's the size of the plate.
And he's done that before.
And what we've got, what you've got to do is with whoever's on the mound, you know, is like, you know, when we're facing Kershaw or, you know, the guys that are filthy, I go, that plate is not 17 inches. You got to cut that thing into a third, because the bottom line is, dude, when you go up there, you're not supposed to get a hit. Now, if you're giving him 17 inches, guess what? You're giving him 19. So cut it into thirds. You look this third or that third. Now, here's the key to the hitting. And if you teach this to your better hitters, it'll be amazing. There are three things that have to happen. I call it the three H's. Number one, you have to have a plan, okay? You have to have a plan. The first thing you do is you do it with your head. So you go up to, before you get to the plate, I'm going to look for the first three pitches, you know, middle in, period. Okay?
Now, is that depends on the hitter, or are most hitters looking
middle in? No, it depends on the pitcher.
On the pitcher.
But the first one's with your head. But here's the key. Second H is your heart. You believe in your plan during that at bat that you're willing to fail with it. If you're not willing to fail with it, you don't have a plan. And then the third H is your hands. Go up and work your hands and do your thing.
You know,
it might be your first, you know,
go ahead.
Your first pitch is middle in. Your second pitch is not the corner outside, but you're going to take 17 inches and turn it into 13 inches. And you're going to look for this pitch. But unless the second H is the key, the heart, if you don't believe in it, if you're not willing to fail with it, then go put your bat in the bat rack. Because the pitcher's got a plan, I'll guarantee you.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you hear the word adjustment a lot. Most hitters, you know, you're not going to be on time all the time, right? So you got to make.
Correct.
What does it mean to make an adjustment during the swing as the pitch is coming? And how do you make that adjustment? With what?
Number one, you don't make an adjustment as the pitch is coming. You can't. You don't have the time. The adjustment is made for the next pitch. And the adjustment is, once again, mental. You cannot speed up. You can't make your swing faster right then. You can't.
Right.
You can't be stronger right then. You're as strong as you are right now. The adjustment is made on how you think he's going to do the next pitch. That's the adjustment. Now, the guys that struggle can't make that adjustment. See, your plan is every pitch. You have to make a plan on that level at every pitch. Now, that's why you see them step out, you know, and you can't step out of the box anymore, but they step out and they're thinking. And now there's three thinkings going on. The hitter's thinking, the catcher's thinking, and the pitcher's thinking. And there's got to be a plan that's made. And sometimes, come on. Hey, the hardest thing in any athletic event is to take a round cylindrical object and hit another round object squarely. Mm-hmm. And the key is being able to make sure that you give the guy out there credit, and there's eight other guys out there, or seven other guys out there, that's going to make your best bolt an out. So you have to be able to handle failure. I've seen this so many – I'm not talking about on the amateur side. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about on the professional side. If you can't handle the failure, it's kind of like – and I don't want to go off, but, you know, we had a couple of guys that, you know, line out. And I go, dude, I have to tell them, you know how you become the batting champion? By lining out.
By getting more line out, sure.
Yeah. And the other is come in here and start throwing helmets and bats, because you know what you're telling the pitcher out there? He's hearing the helmet. He's hearing the bat going through the tunnel. He's going, yep, got your butt. Can't wait till next time. So you want to give him that? You want to tell the pitcher, okay, you got me? No.
No.
That's why you have to learn to handle failure. And if you line out and you line out again, look, I've had on the highest level, I've worked with four batting title guys. They line out a bunch.
Yep. And that's the mental part of the game you're talking about. It's so important.
Absolutely.
What about the hitter that, you know, gets a pitch inside, mistimes it, and maybe it's on him a little bit, but is still able to get a hit? He had to do something to do that, because if he just kept the normal swing, it might have hit the lower part of the bat. Did he make an adjustment there throughout the swing?
No, he did not make an adjustment.
Okay.
That was a lucky thing. And it was because he was in the area for a while. He was in that zone for a while. You cannot get to a plate and make a swing adjustment unless, and listen very carefully here, and you're always looking fastball unless you're just selling out on a breaking ball. You can make an adjustment looking fastball and ride an off-speed pitch. Mm. You can make that adjustment if you're in the zone, if your bat is in the zone long enough. But other than that, they ain't no adjustments.
And that's why you see good hitters that get fooled. They'll be out in front, but they stay through it a lot get a hit.
Stay through.
Yeah, that's
Stay through. Hey. Yeah. You know, and everybody went after we won the batting title with LeMahieu, you know, they went, it's because he's in Colorado. No. Just look what he's doing. He's going to win another one.
What a player.
I don't know when, but he almost did last year, and he's leading again this year. And, well, 60, this is not a season. I can't even go there. However, he's going to do it again.
Blake, one more thing about hitting. I want to jump to, we got about 15 minutes. I want to jump to, you know, the game a little bit, how it's changed and some of the changes we've made. But on the hitting part, because I talk about it a lot, and I should have brought it up first because I believe it's got to be the most important. And I've had some experts on the shows on this. And that's the vision aspect. We don't work on that enough, talk about it enough. What did you guys do at the big league level when it comes to vision training or anything that, or, you know, picking up the ball better, quicker, whatever it may be?
The vision part is there needs to be more work, even on the major league level.
Yeah.
With that, there are eye exercises that have to be done in order to peripherally and lock in. One of the things is
most of that done in spring training, not during the season?
Correct. But carried on into not exercises though. Yeah. So if I was to hold my finger up and you stared at my finger, before long, 5, 6, 7 seconds, you'd be looking at things around me too, besides the finger. Yeah. So one of the things is immediate pickup. So what you do is you don't look at the pitcher. You don't look at the pitcher. Don't look at the pitcher. When he starts his motion, then you glance up, and now you're focused in. Now, timing and rhythm, you know, because of video and so forth, depending on your camera, I count clicks. If you're front foot, if you're striding or you're leg kicking or even if you're just no stride, if that heel isn't down before the ball's halfway to the plate on a fastball, you're late. So here's what the visual part that I talk all the time. And let me give you a great example. Oh, why is his name? He's still pitching. The guy that, you know, goes crazy with his windup and looks and stops and come on.
Tiant did that. Fernando Valenzuela did that. Yeah, Fernando.
Yeah, I did, but now he's with he was with San Francisco. Anyway,
Lincecum, not Lincecum.
No. He's a Latin guy. Anyway, big heavy guy.
Cueto.
Cueto.
There you go.
Cueto. So we'd face Cueto, and the kids would come in, the rookies, and second, and go, I don't know. I go, look, you can't look at him. You watch when he separates his hands and the ball goes down, then you start. I mean, he can sit out there and do anything he wants to and turn all, but nothing happens till the ball goes down. And that's when the timing starts. And with all of your kids, Peter, even with when they're throwing putts, you know, you have to start first. When the ball gets to its lowest, that's when you start your rhythm. Now, if they're throwing putts, then you know you start when it gets up here. But everything's on the ball there, but don't look. You know where most kids look, Peter? They've been taught from their parents. They look at the kid's face. They're not even seeing anything that's going on. They got to follow the ball. And you can't say, look at the pitcher, pick up the ball. Listen to what I'm saying. You can't say that. You go, wait till he separates, pick up the ball, and now concentrate.
Love that. I like that. Never heard that part. Blake, you're going to hear this a lot. Obviously, you know, players are complaining about the shift because they, you know, they're hitting into the shift way too much. You know, in the old days, I remember we took pens and put lines where guys were hitting. We knew it pretty much where they're hitting, but not precise like now. But then the fans, you know, there's fans also, maybe even coaches saying, well, wait a second. You know what? I mean, that isn't it your job to learn how to hit pitches in different zones and hit the other way sometimes? But obviously that can't be done during the game. It's got to be taught.
Well, it is. You know, what started all of that is, you know, everybody gets paid for the home run.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, that's how they made a living. But once again, unless you're huge, you have to learn. You know, when I started with the Rockies, I put up targets into the outfield during batting practice, and you never pulled the ball. Anybody can pull a ball.
Yeah.
So you learn to drive the ball the opposite field. And then I had to put up graphs when we had our meetings. Right-handers with a man on second base. Why is Buster Posey, and this was back in 14, 15, 16. Why was he so nasty of getting an RBI when there was a man on second base? Because he used a big part of the field. Well, what's the big part of the field? Well, from right center for him to left field line. That's huge.
So he changed his plan according to the situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we did that, and that's why in 14 we went kind of crazy with two-strike hitting. It's a mental plan. And we had guys, our batting practice series was, sorry, I know you don't hit and run, Nolan, but right now you are. So in
batting practice. Because that helps you with other things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, they're going to shift you with a man on third or man on second. Well, then – hit your 12 hopper over there. Come on. Hey, that's a stake. You get paid for that.
Yeah, and you know, like today you don't see a lot of that. And I got a little theory, but you don't see a lot of it. And, of course, you know, you're seeing high strikeouts. Yes, you're seeing a lot of home runs. You know, I don't know. I think the fans are going to get tired of that because you want to see more action. But a little theory I had, if you look at the World Series, I don't have the stats, but if you look at the World Series champions, whether it be the Cubs, Boston, you know, I don't know about Houston, how you decide on that, but they, at least the games I saw, they seemed to hit the ball everywhere, and they had home run hitters.
The Nationals.
Nationals, I'm sorry, I should have added, yes, Mike Rizzo's team. I should have added that, my fault.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's my boy. That's my boy over there managing that.
And most of, so if you're an owner and you're spending $200, $300 million and you haven't won, you've got to make an adjustment here because – I'm seeing teams that are hitting better than some other teams, and they're not making it to the World Series, not winning the World Series.
You absolutely have to make an adjustment.
Yeah.
You have to. But the bottom line is, you know, hitters are hitters are hitters, but you win baseball, sorry, and I was an offensive guy, got paid to be one, by pitching and defense.
Yeah.
That's how you win.
Absolutely. Well said.
You know? Well said.
Okay, the other thing is the game itself, the Major League game. Of course, this is a unique year. You know, short season, quick. There's a lot of changes in the game. Some of the, maybe, you know, just briefly, some of the things you like, some of the changes you like, maybe some of the changes you don't like and why.
Huh.
You know, whether it be man on second, whether it be pitching to three hitters, you know, all that.
You know, I'm 50-50 right now.
Yeah.
On the man on second. Do not like at all designated hitter National League.
Mm.
Hey, my wife can manage.
Yeah. That's true. It takes away the managing.
It's not, you know, and I, you know, I've played in the American League, but it takes away, you know, my wife can manage. Here's nine guys. Knock it out.
Yeah.
You know, and it, hey, if you have to pinch hit in American League, then you screwed up putting the ninth guy in. It's you know, there is the only reason I'm 50-50 on two out, you know, in the man on second extra innings is length of game.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason that I'm still 50-50. I'm leaning toward don't like that. And there's a reason. The reason, I'm going to tell you why I'm leaning toward not like it, because that's another managerial thing for the next day. When you start depleting your bullpen, then you have to make a decision. And the mental part of the game, when you don't have to use your bullpen over and over and over again, boom. I do love bringing in a relief pitcher, and you have to hit. You have to do three hitters.
You do like that, yeah.
Freaking love that, because that's a length of game also, and you don't have to worry about who's coming in, who's not, and boom, boom, boom.
That might force some of the teams, or most of the teams, to make sure when they go after pitching that they're looking at pitchers that can get righties and lefties out, because they're not going to be able to match it up for those three hitters.
No question.
So it'd be interesting.
No question.
You know,
and that is all done, Peter, before the game even starts.
Yeah.
I mean, we sit in the manager's office as the hitting guy and with the pitching guys and go over, okay, what might happen in this scenario, that scenario, and that. So that takes, I mean, I love that part. Three batters, dude. Here it is.
Yeah, go for it.
You can't do this? Sorry.
you know, and if you can't go after three hitters as a major league pitcher, you got to wonder, you know, if you can't get three guys, that's got to be, you know, how can you last
that? Well, actually, what's happened over the years is that you have that guy that's only for a lefty.
Right.
And then you're flipping bullpens depleted.
Yeah.
You understand? Because you're bringing that guy in for one, and now you're having to bring the other guy in, and he's going to go three, four. And these guys, the funny thing and the bad thing is, when relief pitchers pitch, it's amazing to me how the game's evolved. If they go three, four hitters, they're done for 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what? You know, we just lost HOF guy, Tom Seaver.
Yes.
And if he didn't go nine, he didn't do his job.
Yeah.
That was his mentality.
And they say that players nowadays are stronger, better shape, so you'd think they'd be able to go longer.
I got one word to say about that. It's not a word. Wah. No.
I love it. Well, I love the honesty.
I am not politically correct. No.
Yeah.
It's not truth.
Yeah, that's good.
And they are physically strong and so forth. but they don't, they haven't been prepared to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Peter, if somebody goes nine, it's a major news event.
Blake, but that's the system that created that.
Correct.
Yeah, that's the, you know, minor league system, the whatever system, the major league system, they kind of created that so the players have to fall in line in that area. And then becomes mental that I can only go after a lefty or after a righty, that I can't get anybody else out. And it reminds me of the World Baseball Classic. The Japanese won the World Baseball Classic the first year. Their whole pitching staff was all starters and one closer.
Correct.
Because when you were called on to get that guy out, here's the plan, here's where you pitch him, and you got to get it done.
Well, your arm will actually – however you train it, it will go, you know. And if you train it, and we started doing this again in high school back in the 90s and counting pitches, and yeah, a kid goes, well, my arm's a little sore. Well, you know what? You get to 70 pitches, 65 pitches, your arm's sore, and you stop, and you don't do anything about it. Guess what's going to happen the next time you're 65 or something. I mean, it's not rocket science.
No, it's common sense. It really is. You've been fantastic. I want to finish it with this, and hopefully we can bring you back on it, because this can be a whole show in itself, important show. And you ran the baseball schools for a long time. You've been around young kids, coaches, parents. You know, just briefly, some of the things you think, again, same side that youth baseball – is possibly going in the wrong direction, or maybe there's some positives, because I think there's some things we may be doing that can be hurting long-term development of young players and keeping kids in the game longer. So what have you seen from when we had the baseball schools back then till now?
So glad you asked that. Kids are playing too much.
Amen.
When I say too much, I'm talking about, you know, I've had moms to go, you know, my 13-year-old played 110 games last year. I went, wow, how much did he get paid?
Wow.
You know, when I played that many, I got paid. The big thing, because you're a teacher of the game, you do not learn how to play the game mechanically by playing the game. Playing the game, if you're playing the game all the time, you only get experience. It has nothing to do with increasing the fundamentals. Nothing. So if we cut down half the time, and that's why you're good at what you do, bro, and that's why I love what you do. You're teaching the teachers. We have to spend more time teaching the teachers how to put on a practice. Yes. And if you're practicing more than an hour and a half, you stink. Everybody has to be doing something all the time, and you're born again. If they're not, and you're practicing more than an hour and a half, you're wasting their time and yours. And we have to teach our coaches, I'm not politically correct, that nobody comes to a game to watch them.
Great point.
And you don't teach during the game.
Better point. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. First pitch, bell rings, let's go play and have fun. And all you do is be a positive person in that youngster's life. And here's why. If I'm an amateur coach, this is probably the most important thing I've said all night. If I'm an amateur coach, I don't know what's happening in that youngster's life when he comes to me that day. I have no idea if mom and dad had a blowout. I have no idea, even on the first practice day, if he has a dad or a mom, and all he's there to have is fun. That's all he's there. He's there to do one thing, and that's have fun. And so here's the scenario I give. So little Johnny's at shortstop, and the guy makes a pitch, and Johnny's 10 years old. Man on third base, ball's hit, and the ball goes between Johnny's legs. The pitcher gets the ball back. He rubs it down and turns to Johnny and goes, "Oh, coach in the dugout. God, how many times have I told you that you have to get your glove and your bottom down?" And all Johnny is there for is to have fun. So he comes, gets three outs, go in, and he's leading off. Johnny's leading off. And as he goes up, there's in the stands from the other team, "Hey, throw it down the middle. Maybe he hits way he feels." Yeah. And all Johnny wants to do that day is have fun. And then after the game, he runs off the field, and there's his dad. "Come here, come here, come here, come here. Why in the world did you this or do that?" And the ride home isn't really good. And all he wanted to do that day was have fun. And then when he gets home, gets out of the car, dad goes, "Get your glove. We're going to hit ground balls in the backyard. That's not going to happen again." Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And all he wanted to do that day was have fun. There's a time to have fun. There's a time to teach. And, you know, that destroys. That doesn't do anything but destroy. And, oh, my God, we're in a country right now that all of a sudden everybody's yelling. Peter, everybody's yelling.
Especially on social media.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop. And let's get back to the things that are fundamental. The things about love. You know what? You think my wife gives a flying flip and she's battling cancer?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Trey Mancini, who's battling cancer, gives a flying flip right now? He just wants to get back to what he's supposed to be doing. And we're supposed to be human beings the way we're supposed to be human beings, Peter. And that's what you do. And that's what hopefully I do and will continue to do with God's love. And that's love the kids and love the coaches.
That's great advice. Well, I love that. And, you know, if people forget, words matter, so we really have to be careful what we say. On that ending, I think it's a perfect segue into what you have been doing, because I saw it a few times now, but you do it every day, I believe, on Facebook. Mention the Facebook page and what you're doing on Facebook every day.
Well, I go to Facebook, and, you know, you can subscribe to Blake Doyle on Facebook, but also have a YouTube channel, and it's called Blake Doyle MVP. And that's memorize, visualize, then go out and perform it. And I try to give little snippets on what we need to do in our lives. What are you doing? Who are you doing it for? And anything that positively can help. And the biggest thing I love is not just people watching it. I want feedback. And I promise I answer you back on the feedback. But thanks for mentioning that, Peter. I appreciate that.
That's fantastic. And let me tell you, I could talk to you all day. I mean, this could be a 4 or 5 hour show easily. You've got a lot of important things to take care of. And I can't thank you enough, Blake. I got to bring you back. We'll do it eventually again, but it will bring it back all on youth baseball and the development of it. I think that'd be a great show.
Thanks, Peter.
God bless
thanks
you.
Thanks for you doing what you do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. That's very inspiring. Folks, that's Blake Doyle. I'm Pete Caliendo. Special thanks to Blake. Special thanks to our producer, Brian Crock with the Lineup Media Group. And, of course, special thanks to everybody in the U.S. and around the world. Don't forget, please do us a favor. Go to Peter Caliendo YouTube, subscribe. Hit that big red button that says subscribe. That's all you have to do. It's free. 100 shows already. I'm going to wish you the best of luck, everybody. And we'll see you. God bless y'all. We'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.